all of this. And then the four years of his second term are all really international. It's meant to now establish and bring internationalism together with the American way. And it culminates at the Paris Peace Conference in 1919, where they establish everything.
And of course, they had to demonize the hell out of Russia, I mean, out of Germany.
Yep.
And its leader, because that was a very big example of how independence from them can make you flourish, and how nationalism is a tool, a weapon against it, against yep. them. And they couldn't have that. So they had to demonize him throughout history, because they don't want anybody to even look that direction and get any ideas for how yes. they can liberate themselves.
And the fact that Germany had all kinds of natural resources within their boundaries made them a threat to the entire European area.
They didn't want their industry to get any be competitive with Britain. That was one of the big deals.
Yeah, and what happened after the Treaty of Versailles? But the French were allowed to go into Germany for 15 years and extract whatever the fuck they wanted.
Yep.
So this last paragraph here, and then on to the end.
As part of their debts. The same thing with natural resources anywhere. That's why you see, you know, China, quote unquote, who basically was controlling or buying the debt from Canada. Now they have full access to all their resources.
Right.
And yes. I would say that maybe some of the reasons why the pipelines were cut down here was, you know, we can say environmental this and environmental that. It's probably just because somebody else already owns it. We've already,
right.
you know, if you know how the type of debt we're in, it's probably because we don't have resources. Technically, because they're gone now. They're
right
under somebody else's control.
Yeah, they're indebted to somebody else. So the situation is further complicated by an agreement made early in November 1918 by the British and French and brought to the president's attention, telling the people of the East that their wishes would be consulted in the disposition of their future. Now, I believe that that is Sykes-Picot. So one day in the Council of Four, when the Syrian matter was under dispute, the president suggested that the dispatch of a commission to find out what the people really wanted. Now, that is the Guggenheim-Frankfurter-led mission that actually stops in Gibraltar, and that's it. That's as far as it goes. So it began with Syria, but the field of inquiry was extended over the whole East. Mr. Balfour wrote a memorandum to the Prime Minister, David Lloyd George, and he believed it went to the president, pointing out that Palestine should be excluded from the terms of reference because the powers had committed themselves to the Zionist program, again, MME, which inevitably excluded numerical self-determination. So the argument of self-determination on sheer numbers, the Arab Semitic-speaking population easily wins. They are at 700,000. This is what Balfour states in this piece of literature, that there's 700,000 Arabs in comparison to whatever the number was of Hebrew. But even today, there's 500 million Arab Semitic-speaking people there. In comparison, there's about 10 million Hebrew.
Right.
Hebrew is about the fourth largest population, yet they claim Semitic ownership of it all when they call somebody an anti-Semite, don't they?
Right, exactly. I was about to make that statement. It's like nobody ever says anti-Semite and thinks Muslim or right. thinks Arab.
And I show progressives this, and I say there's 77 branches. You're the anti-Semite, and they will not talk to me again. They'll block me and they'll leave, because that is the truth. And so you can see Balfour stating here that we can't determine self, or we can't give self-determination on numbers, because the Jew won't get it. We are dealing not with the wishes of an existing community, but are consciously seeking to reconstitute a new community and definitely building for a numerical majority in the future.
Ta-da-da.
They want to outnumber them there. Do you see what's going on there right now, people?
So there's two ways to do that. You bring more people in, or you reduce their population.
Yep. And I think that, you know, when you look at that, 700,000 back in the day of Arabs and like 10,000 Hebrew, you look at that number today, 700,000 or 500 million in comparison to 10 million, they haven't really been able to gain any ground as far as out birthing them. So what are you going to do? There's only one option: to eliminate them. And that is what's happening today. And you can see that it's stated in 19.
Hold on, my pager's going off.
Okay.
No, dude.
Yeah, pager bomb. I heard about that. It's funny how you can try to stay away from the mainstream, but you still pick up little nuggets along the way.
Yeah, people share stuff with me. That's the only reason I know stuff.
And so they stayed there. And it's worth stating again We are dealing not with the wishes of an existing community, but are consciously seeking to reconstitute a new community and definitely building for a numerical majority in the future. So when you look at the Balfour Declaration and it says in there, it clearly being understood that nothing shall be done to the already existing, or no, nothing shall be done to prejudice the civil and religious rights of the already existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. So there's a direct contradiction when you read that sentence right there that we've read twice, and then you look at the Balfour Declaration, the resulting document that comes from these meetings. You can see that they declare something officially, publicly, but privately they're saying, no. We're going to, this has nothing to do with the wishes of an existing community there. We are going to reconstitute a new community, and we're going to outbirth them, or we're going to become the majority there someday in the future. Here we are 100 years later, and they're still not. So you can see that they got to create genocide. They have to kill large numbers of these people at one time in order for them to ever have a majority. So we go to the final page.
Sounds about the president on the other side.
Sorry. Are you seeing that page now?
Yep.
You are?
Yeah, I did.
Oh. Okay, hang on. Let me do that again. That was pretty smooth, and then I screwed it up.
Yeah, that's not good. Get it done.
So, let's see.
Let's see who's on here today. Oh, good. Things are climbing. Good.
Okay, so third page. With any doctrine of self-determination, he asked the justice how he thinks the president will do it. The justice replied that Mr. Balfour had already indicated the solution and pointed out that the whole conception of Zionism as a Jewish homeland was a definite building up for the future as means of dealing with a world problem and not merely with the disposition of a already existing community. Mr. Balfour stated he supposed that would be the president's line. He continued to point out the great difficulties that are now besetting Great Britain in the East, namely the ferment in the whole Eastern world, the Mohammedan restlessness, the new Arabic imperialism, and the relations with the French. Then there is also the Sykes-Picot Agreement that is dead, but its ruins still encumber the earth. He was anxious that the justice should know these difficulties, for they all bear upon the Palestinian situation. So this is why Balfour and Brandeis are getting together right after America declares war in 1917, Balfour expresses interest in meeting Brandeis specifically more than anybody else once he got to Washington. And this is why, because they had to inform him of everything that's going on before decisions are made. Now, that is incredible, because that puts the justice in a leading role above everybody.
Exactly. And makes no sense, the continuity of, like, you know, hierarchy, but it does if you know who he's involved with.
It all makes sense when you understand the Rothschilds are involved, and they're the ones donating the land, and they're involved in all of this back and forth cabling and the final authoring of the Balfour Declaration. So the justice hoped that while he was away, this is incredible. The justice hoped that while he was away, at least nothing would be done which would embarrass the fulfillment of the three conditions which he laid down as essential to the realization of the Zionist program. He is telling Balfour, don't screw this up while I'm gone.
Right. That was a threat.
Balfour then stated that he understood Justice Brandeis's request that no decision be taken as to the boundaries and the extent of control over the land in any way counter to his views until his return in about 4 or 5 weeks from Palestine. He thought it was perfectly safe to give him the assurance that no decision will be taken to those matters during that time to embarrass the aims which the justice indicated. Mr. Balfour stated that he would be either in Paris or in London when the justice returned, and he hoped that he will report to him at once upon his return on the questions as they appear to him from a study on the spot. So no statesman could have been more sympathetic than Mr. Balfour was with the underlying philosophy and aims of Zionism, as they were stated by Mr. Justice Brandeis, nor more eager that the necessary conditions should be secured at the hands of the peace conference and of Great Britain to assure the realization of the Zionist program.
Again, did any of these pages, did any of these pages come from Nick when he was doing his
Nope.
At the library.
Nope. And I have a PhD in history that we are now talking on Facebook. And he was talking to me about these papers. I already knew of them. And he's actually, I can't remember his name right now, but he's important. He did a really great study on all of this, but from a PhD university position. And so it's really good. I'll share it on Facebook with anybody that wants it.
Cool. And what are you on Facebook so people know?
Diego Garcia.
Okay.
So it was a 200-minute article that he'd written as a PhD in the university system on Brandeis, because he'd seen, you know, a little bit about Brandeis and started asking questions similar to the questions we ask. But he's only investigated Brandeis in the Zionist era, which means that he's only investigating one chapter of the 10-chapter Rise of the Expert and all of the influence in other areas that Brandeis has.
Right.
And so I indicated that a little bit to him a couple of days ago, and he's promised to look more into our work. So this is really where...
This is already past where we're at here, because it's already in motion. If you're saying the Zionist era, so he doesn't even know how integrate he was into the developing of this.
Yep, he didn't know that he coined the term scientific management. He didn't know anything about sociological jurisprudence, at least as far as I know. But these things came as a surprise to him. And so I told him that this guy is the maker of our modern day social contract, the literal matrix. It's more than just Zionism. He's influencing across the board. And so he's promised to look into our work. And what this is, people, is how a PhD gets in your way.
Right. Because you've already been taught in one way.
Well, you have a vested interest. You are within a framework of a story. And, he's using all the same sources we are, except we aren't encumbered by perversion of authority. We don't have anybody that's controlling what we're going to say and telling us what we can't say. We are just in a journey towards the truth, trying to find exactly what happened in the real history. And so you can see that his PhD got in the way.
There's subtleties too, right? Because I mean, there could be just this impression that you get, or direction they're saying, okay, so the meat of this particular story is in this time frame. So you don't look for anything else. You look for that section. You get enough out of there, but you don't know what else happened before. It could just be just as simple as, you know, the blinders being here, because you're expecting to find something here, but you weren't even aware that there'd be more previous to that, and how that led up and all that stuff. So it's a lot easier to guide people if they don't think they're being guided, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So. And so he was surprised about the House of Truth. He'd never heard of that, but this is really the focus. This is the nexus, the genesis, ground zero of the progressive era movement.
This just gets me.
Huh?
I said the whole idea of the name House of Truth really gets me.
It's like
more inversion of every single word.
Yep. And that, you know, I'm not sure. There's a few hypotheses on why they named it the House of Truth. We can go into that one day, but you know, this is all about Greek allegory, or, you know, knowing the classics.
Like Torah juice. That's right.
Just like they're naming these DARPA programs about stories you would never know or come in contact with unless you were studying the classics.
But they're invoking that archetype, that energy, every time they do that, to empower their programs and their missions.
Right. So
it's all dark magic.
That's about all I have. We've actually gone over 2 hours.
Yep.
So I'm going to continue to investigate down this avenue. And I've got a radio broadcast with RBN on Friday night at 8 p.m.
I'm
going to probably go through this again, depending on which direction they want to go. But I'm going on with Lark from Texas, and he's really investigated the communitarian angle of all of this. And he said that, you know, they're using the same language there, you know, knew this and knew that. And so on Friday night, we're going to try to clarify and bring the two ideas together and see if there's parallels and common ground between the American progressive movement and the communitarian movement, which I've already seen these things. So it just gets further, more interesting with each week that passes by, with more research. We're delving into more surprising details as to just how the progressive movement infiltrated our society. And so what we're going to try to do is show you what it looks like today, because this is how you're going to be able to see the echoes of history and then say, no, We screwed up once. We're not going to do it again. So this is the importance of history. So we don't condemn ourselves to repeating it over and over. We see that actually happening right now, that there's a large segment of the television public that are progressives without even knowing it. And they're falling to these spells, these black magic spells that are filled with kind words like sustainability. So we're going to continue down that road, and we'll bring further investigations next week as to, you know, our further findings. And I
very good
encourage everybody to drop in and see Daniel, and
yeah,
you know, support Daniel in his pursuit of a new computer, people.
What time is RBN, is that broadcast going on?
8 p.m. Pacific.
Is there a link to the...
Yep, I'll provide a link. There is a link if you go, or you're not on Facebook. So I can send you one. I'll send you the link and then you can listen. And yeah, we just had our first broadcast last Friday night.
If you want me to drop it into the chat so people can save it, or...
Mm-hmm. I got to go...
I'm going to go on Facebook and look for Diego Garcia right now.
Do you have a Facebook account?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I hardly ever use it, but I do.
Yeah, I'm on there. Diego
Garcia, a politician.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, so RBN is a little bit...
Actor.
Down my wall here. Oh, and the other interesting thing, dude, is that I can't share it on Facebook.
Oh, no.
Because I'm in Canada.
Oh, well.
So I posted a screenshot where I say, hey, everyone, because I'm in Canada, this link can't be shared, but I advertise RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network, and the show on Friday night.
Controlled up. Just so.
And then one of my friends, Liz Elms, was awesome enough to grab the link and share it in the comment section. So let's see if I can actually share that link.
Just make sure you don't get dirtied up by being on RBN. That's all. They got some controlled app going on over there.
RBN.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about this particular broadcaster, but yeah.
Yeah, cool. I mean, kind of like Travis seems to be okay, but you know, who knows? And
just don't enter the dark side, my friend.
They've been, they allowed me to say whatever I wanted to say. I don't know if it's meant to incriminate me, but I'm going to continue to move forward and not be affected by any of the bullshit, because that's the only way we're going to win.
Right.
And so if you give me an opportunity to speak, I'm going to speak. If Joe Rogan phoned me tomorrow, I would definitely go on, because that gives me all kinds of influence, and you know, I can start
exposure. Right.
And I can start to show how Rogan himself is fulfilling the role of the political philosopher, much like Walter Lippmann did 100 years ago, to influence society.
So I put it in the live chat for Rumble, and I put it in the live chat for FTJ Media. So if you don't know that there's a box there, bottom right hand corner on FTJ Media, there's a little thing that looks like a little, you know, thought cloud. It's green, I think. You click it and it opens up and you'll see the link in there. Am I right? All right.
Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, man.
I appreciate everything you've done for me, Daniel, and allowed me to come on and talk. These Wednesday mornings have been awesome. So,
yeah, I have a great time with it. It's a lot of fun. I like when the three of us also work together on stuff. That's really cool. And we look forward to next week. Mm-hmm. Hope you have a good Friday. This coming Friday, right?
Yes, we're going to do this Friday, and then we're not sure what it's going to be, but we'll see where it goes.
Cool. All right, bud. Well, thank you again for your time. And we are signing off right now. Guys, you know what to do as far as the links in the description. Also, I just want to remind you that last night I did a simulcast broadcast of Dr. Peter Glidden's. We got a couple more members through the subscription thing, which I highly encourage. There's a coupon code for 50% off. Supports the show, which supports Dr. Glidden, of course, and it supports you, because then you have access to that information that'll help you improve your health and well-being for you and your family. All right, that's it.